39. The Moon Wife. Well, your ladyship, I wish I'd known I was travelling in the company of a spanty and fucking nobility. Were you planning on telling me you were highborn? I said to Galva back at the inn. Galva had just had her bath, and I swear the woman looked an inch taller since she'd let slip she'd a duke for a father, and a famous duke at that, one known outside his country. Even I knew Rodrigo Braga lost half his fortune on dead horses, but still had more wealth than any but the king's family. Braga had the finest pasture lands in Espanthia, which means the finest in Manreach, and they'd been mounted knights going back 500 years. The Braga crest, as you may know, is a horse rearing over a skeleton. Ironic. And how sad for the duke to lose his horses and all his sons, and to see his daughter and heir in love with death. Fit for a troubadour to sing about on a warm Sath's day in the month of Flora, with a maiden's head in her lap. That the guild had attached me to her now took on new meaning. Galva was after the supposedly mad Infanta, the Spanth princess who'd been married off to the King of Ustrum. Galva had said she was going to rescue a princess, and being a liar myself, I assumed it a lie. But now it seemed a certainty. What was the guild's interest in Mireia, who had led Ustrum to outlaw the guild? Kill her? That made sense, but the guild was greedy and a queen was a valuable thing. Kill the birder and ransom Mireia? That rang true. But you never knew with those fuckers. My head was reeling. Why should I have told you who I was? Galva said. I'd have picked my nose less often and pissed farther off in the trees. No. You would have jested about my family and forced me to hurt you. That my brothers have died and left me heir to my father's title is not meat for your japes. But you would have japed all the same. You cannot help yourself. Your mouth is like an old man's bladder. That's just mean. There's no reason for you to be mean. She grunted and poured wine for herself. It's the middle of the afternoon. You're going to die the yellow death from that, I said, pointing at her cup. My death will be red, like my wine, or so I pray. Now tell me what you really know about that Chodalu cat. Other than that he's good luck, I said. Do not be evasive. What do you want me to say? I want you to tell me the reason he is trying to open my side pack. Do you have any cheese in there? He loves cheese. There is no Chodalu cheese in my pack. What does he want? He wants something. Probably love. He will find no love in my pouches. Maybe he thinks your heart fell in there. You look so harshly at him. Why don't you give his ears a scratch and make friends? She made a disgusted sound and left the room, leaving me alone with Bully Boy. Malk was prowling seaside taverns looking for another ship, or a fight, or both. Nargle had gone to the magic quarter to see how she might replace what she'd lost from her cases. I looked at Bully Boy. What the hell were you doing rooting through her gear? You want her to wring your neck? Bully rowed like a simple cat, his face pointing 3/4 of the way toward me. Are you even in there? I said. Ho, killer, are you there? The cat just sat. I didn't know if Sesta was out of him or just sleeping, if she did sleep. I didn't know much about harbouring. But I was pretty confident she was gone, out roaming the city of Edth, filling the great hollow of her belly. So I picked Bully up by the nape and put him in my lap, and scratched his ears, making him close his blind eyes and purr so hard, in and out, he might have been a busted bellows. This is just for you, then, I said. This is just between us. Edth was a beautiful city. 300-year-old canals of greenish water cut through streets of white-grey brick, while terraced stone pyramids planted with frost roses, tulips, and juniper, bear's breath, plum vine, and goldenberry stood at crossroads. The queen's trees defined the borders of the neighbourhoods, witched to regrow picked fruit overnight. Any Edther could take a pear or apple at will, but taken two would earn a clout from the queen's cudgels, who enforced the law here as Chainsdams did in Holt. Edth's strong pale lager and honey-sweet cider were shipped to Brace and Holt, and carted as far south as Beltia. To sell an Untherman beer was an expression for pulling off a real coup, and that's exactly what Edth did. It was said Unthorkind would only drink the beers of Unther and Edth, and declare the rest not fit to piss in. Edthers drank Unther beer as well, and gathered in Espanthian wine, as well as Bracish mead and cider, Istrian grappa, and whisky from Norald and Galtia. Every sailor gladdened to learn their ship would dock at Edthport, for Edth had more and lovelier taverns than churches. These taverns also had the best names: The Sotted Bear, Her Lover's Poem, The Hook and Goad, Your Father's Belt, The Quartered Son, The Feathered Scold. This last was named for the Middle Sea Queen who upbraided Parliament, saying donkeys were made to pull, not sit and bray. Five of those old men had her seized and covered her with glue and feathers, saying hens were for laying eggs, not singing. She became the lover of a great general, got the knights on her side, and disbanded Parliament. She told the geezers she'd outmanoeuvred that hens and donkeys had gone to war and that hens had won. The Hen and Donkey Tavern is on Water Street. She then had the five who had feathered her lashed to a cart and made them pull her around Edth for all to see. The Five Men Bridled is on Castle Street, and that's where I met Nargal for supper. I was thinking, she said, looking at me over her cider cup and her plate of plummed quail and her rosemary bread, her eyes merrier than I'd ever seen them, that you might fit for a time. Fit what? I said. Me. I'd never been a blusher, but I'm fairly sure I coloured. I pulled a rabbit's leg out of my stew and sucked the gravy off, trying for all the world to look like I was thinking only of gravy. We might make a moon vow together with all that means, but only if ye agree to certain conditions. She tore her roast bird's tiny wing and stripped the flesh off it with her teeth, sucking the bone in a way that somehow seemed more natural than lewd, though of course it meant what it meant. Her lover for a month. Her husband of a sort for a month. This was old Galtish business, Harrow's business, older than Holt, older than the White Road and the Knock. It sang to my blood, and not just because I was young and full of want for her. I'm listening, I said, smiling my best half-smile at her. I'll bet you are, you fond man. First, rub a bit of this on your cheek, that cheek, she said, pointing at my tattoo and handing me a five-sided bottle of some coppery unguent. Ask me what it is and I'll take it back. I nodded. I rubbed a bit in, and it was warm. I was hoping it wouldn't take the thing off. If I were spotted in some place or other without my penalty mark and me that not timely, I'd be in for trouble. The guild might make it a fist rather than an open hand. They might have one of my thumbs. But I trusted her. Fothanan protect me, I trusted Nargal Nagalbraith. You know about magical tattoos, then? More than a little. Can you make them? I can. That's proper strong magic. You never told me you could do that. I stole a bite of blue carrot and onion out of my stew. And when did you ask? Now, do you want to hear my conditions, or shall I find some other fella? The new moon's tonight, you know. I did know, but not for spellcraft. Knowing how dark a night was going to be was a thief's business. I touched an ear. I'm listening. First, you'll do as I say to keep my belly flat. I'm not for making bairns to raise. I serve my craft and my kind, and I'll not do that so well with my nap in a pup's mouth. This besides the world being no fit place to live. I remembered my fancy on the whale ship of breeding with her, and released it. She watched me do that before she moved on. Second, you'll not tell me your secrets, nor I yours, none that you don't want to share. We're making a month together, not a life, and even life-wives have locked a door or two in their hearts. Agreed, said I, mindful and grateful for the way she hadn't pressed me on the matter of the cat. Last and most, she said, you'll not change your manner with me. You've never been less than a friend to me, and you'll not start when I share your bed, or I'll regret it. If a man looks upon me, even a fair man, he'll know he's got at least a month to wait, and probably forever. And I'll know the same of you with the girlines. Agreed. Oh, and there's one more thing. What? I don't do that one bit. I looked around to be double sure we weren't listened to and dropped my voice. And what bit's that? You know. Sure, and I don't. There's lots of bits. Some don't do some bits, and others think nothing of it. But those second bits the first ones do might shock the second ones who prefer to do the first bits. Right, I forgot what an expert you are. But I know you know the bit I mean, you kirk. Killing crotch fleas with lamb oil, I whispered. She put her hand over her mouth and giggled at that, and it was her turn to colour. Well, she said, looking at me over her mug again, will you have me? Will you stand under the blind moon with me tonight and say some binding words? Before I could answer, my Marge and I noticed a shape coming up on my right, a weaving, drunken sort of shape.
Barkeep, he said.
Ah, oh, shite, here it came. And a drunkie too. The drunk ones were the worst, not only because half the time they'd miss and cuff your ear, but because it was twice as galling being cuffed about by someone you could thrash without trying. My luck felt chill. This wouldn't be good. I ate me rabbit fast.
Barkeep,
he said again, and this time the barkeep looked. Anyone claim the mark on this one? I chewed and chewed. He's minding his business, Johash, she said. Why don't you mind yours? It's not like you need another. Those at the bar laughed good-naturedly. Have I mentioned that I like Middlesea? Maybe being ringed in by large or dangerous neighbours makes a nation smarter and kinder. They're smarter and kinder there. Except for this twat Johash, I mean. 19 years old if a day, big as life and dumb as bricks. Well, I claim him. Bite, chew, 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 chew. He staggered close now, swallow. Will you stand up or do you want it sitting? He said as if he were offering to shine my boots for me. I noticed his barely grown-in moustache was damp and I was disgusted. Just get it over with, I said, mortified that my talk with Nargle had to be cheapened by this shite. I thought about taking another bite of stew and spitting it on his face when he struck, but the guild wouldn't have that. Made them look bad. I just had to take it. I knew it was a risk coming to a tavern. But still, a cullion like this paddling me. He upped his sleeve with some ceremony. He'd nodded at Nargle, a gentleman to the last. She winked at him. I couldn't guess why at the time. He swung his meaty hand at me, and it hit me, and it stung and wrung me ear. A big, heavy stack of kumok, that Johash. But he wasn't done hitting. The same hand that hit me now swung up, and Johash slapped himself across the cheek, harder than he'd hit me. I barked a laugh before I could stop myself. Oh, he said, too drunk to know what was happening. He backhanded himself now for good measure, and said, ow, more quietly than the blow deserved. I looked at Norrigal. She shrugged. Ha, a girline near him said, amused by the spectacle. The hand of Johash immediately reached out and slapped that lass, though Johash hadn't even been looking at her. That woman's friend put an arm on Johash's shoulder, saying, see here now. So the hand of Johash fetched her a mighty slap too, wrenching Johash around. I think it hurt his shoulder, because he went, ow, again. Now the first woman punched Johash. Johash kicked at her. The hand of Johash slapped another woman. That woman elbowed Johash hard like a soldier, and he staggered. And pretty soon Johash was on his knees, getting a shite beaten and kicked out of him. Nargle took my chin in her hand and wheeled my face back around to make me look at her. You never answered my question, she said. Yes, of course it's yes. Good. First I'll have you wear this, she said, hanging a cord around my neck. From that cord dangled a pretty, pearly grey half of a stone that had been cleaved in twain. It was small, just about the size of a half a plum pit. She put the other half around her own neck. What is this? I asked. A cloven stone. It was a delight to behold. It had been split right where a brown flaw winked like a tiny eye. Her half had a speck of the flaw in it too. Feels like it's got magic in it. Oh, it does. What's it do? Lets me call you. Are you me? She didn't get to show me how yet, though. Now a man yelled, Johash is witched. That one there witched him. He pointed at Nargle. Hard gazes fell on us. That's right, I witched him, Nargle said, standing. I am the handmaid of Gwendryn Aglbraith of Galt, queen of the snowless wood, called Deadlegs, the witch of the downward tower. I enjoy her protection as this man enjoys mine. That paused the crowd but irked the barkeep. She's away in Holt, she said, coming from around the bar with a truncheon. And this is my tavern. Out with you, she pointed the truncheon. I grabbed what was left of my stew. Leave the bowl. I turned it up to me mouth and slurped what gravy I could, taking what remained of the rabbit leg in me hand. It had cost me 2 pretty Middlesea maids, finer than the marks they minted in Hold, and I wasn't losing my whole supper just because Kirk and Joe Hash wanted a Kirk and free lager. Nargal turned with some dignity and walked slowly for the door. I set the stew bowl down, wiped my face with my sleeve, and went with her, but didn't turn my back, as I rightly suspected the crowd was against us. Several of them came, but not to do us injury, just to toss us out the faster. We were roughly grabbed and jostled, myself more roughly, for they fancied themselves gentlefolk and were scared of Nargal besides. And we soon found ourselves face down in the mudded wheel ruts outside the 5 men bridled, the rabbit leg in the mud as well, an alley dog now making bold to snatch it and run back. Better him than the potwash boy, I said, laughing, and she laughed too. We sat up like children making mud cakes and laced our fingers together, looking up into the black, cloudless sky, looking toward the grey-black disk that was the blinded moon. She took my face in her hand, and I took hers in mine, as was the custom. Kinshna Shannock, as the new moon is your witness, will you take me as your moon wife, and do me 1 month's good in bed and out of it? I will, Nargal Nagalbraith. Will you do the same by me? You know I will. And we sat in the mud and kissed, dirty, cold and careless, her tasting the beer and rabbit of my mouth, and me tasting plum and cider on hers. This until an ox cart rumbled up and we stood to walk together. She ran ahead of me, then turned to face me, putting the cloven stone in her mouth. Was it a whistle? I asked. Just wait, she said, meaning just wait. One of the marks of loving somebody must be that you can understand them with their mouth full. Wait for what? I said. It's a good warm-up. Got to warm up. She kept walking backward, looking at me. In just a moment, my stone lifted like an iron slug toward a magnet, floating up on its cord, which tugged gently at the back of my neck. Stay still, she commanded. I did so. She now ran around to my right and the stone followed her. She made a circuit of me, and so did the stone. She spat it out of her mouth then. An instant later the stone began to drift down, slowly, in pulses, like a man's pillock after a tumble. Which wasn't far from my mind, between her kisses and watching her mouth that stone. Will it do that if you put it anywhere else? She smiled open-mouthed, said, anywhere that'll warm it up. We all but ran to the public baths.